No, it's not Rob.
Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What? My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Mr. Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's get it.
What is up, fellas? I'm doing all right.
Chilling. Yes, sir. How you doing today, bro?
I'm fantastic. There's an actual there's a link. It's like Pharaoh Mock. It's like tin. That's what I got to get in the next intro, man. I love everything about the intro. I just think about that whenever I'm getting hyped, man. So good call. What's that in the back?
Okay.
It sounds like crickets or something like that, man. I'm hearing. Am I crazy? Am I hearing stuff, man, or what, man?
No, that's me. I was outside. I didn't do it outside just so I'm not too loud to wake up the kids. Yeah. That's how
you
do it in the birds.
No worries.
Sorry.
It's all good. No, I thought I was crazy. I'm hearing things, man. My DJ ears are glued in. But anyway, welcome to Talk Sports 12, man. We're having fun, man. Birthdays, all that fun, some anniversaries happening. But let's check in with my fellas.
Yes, sir.
They always get my vote for the Hall of Fame. Mr. JQ, how you feeling this evening, bro? You doing all right? Again.
Oh, man, I'm doing all right. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. These Bluetooth headphones are pretty good if you pick up the crickets in the yard. I'm good, man. Worked the Stripers game today, and it's first day of school for the girls tomorrow, so we've been running around crazy. So, y'all forgive me, but doing good. How you doing, man?
Good, man. We won't keep you too long, Brandon. You want to get prepared, get sleeping, prepare for that, man. That's all we like to do, man. Rob Ford, mm-hmm. T-Rob, how you doing, bro?
Man, doing good. You know, you got that pre-show nap, man. You know, ready to rock and roll.
I'm happy for you, bro.
Gotta have it.
It's all good. Let's get this party started here. We got a lot of topics to discuss, to say the least. Shout out to Tony for listening last week. He got a lot of good comments and feedback. Again, you want to interact with us, always reach out. The number to call, 424-243-9519. Once again, 424-243-9519 is the number. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMANSports. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/12manSports, or Talking Sports with the 12th Man as well. So, Rob, I'm not sure. I love kind of kicking off with some college football topics here in Kansas State. Bill Snyder, what do you got to say about the preview, Rob? Let's get right into this.
Well, you know, it's obviously not a program we talk a whole lot about the show, but we got some feedback from Kansas, so we're going to give them a little love. Obviously, Bill Snyder has rebuilt his program not once but twice. You know, he came out of retirement a second time to rebuild his program. So, obviously, not a national championship contending program, but it's a program that's going to be solid. Obviously, you know, they have their entire offensive line returning, so they're going to be strong there. They have two quarterbacks. They're going to have a great defense. The question mark is going to be on special teams. From a kicker, long snapper standpoint, they're going to have to replace a lot of positions on special teams. But expect Kansas State to be right in that mix for a 9-10 win season with a bowl game appearance. I do expect them to be overall kind of in the middle of the pack of the Big 12. But, you know, this is kind of where we are with the Kansas State program, in my personal opinion, you know. I mean, they finished last season with 3 wins over Oklahoma State, Iowa State, and UCLA, so they finished on a very strong end. You know, they're still in the middle of the pack when it comes from a recruiting standpoint, but, you know, I still expect them to be somewhere in the middle of the pack, make a bowl game appearance, 8-9, 10 wins possibly for Kansas State.
Yeah, in that Big 12, I don't know if I give them the 10 wins. I'll probably give them somewhere to – I think 8 wins is a good season for Kansas State, just due to everything you just said. You know, a springboard into this year off of a win over, you know, Rose and UCLA. in the Cactus Bowl in the last year. So they ended up on a positive note, like Rob just spoke to. And they didn't crack the top 25, but I believe they checked in 32nd in this initial coaches poll. So they're getting a little love, you know, from the other coaches. They're recognizing that the Fighting Bill Snyders are going to be they're always tough, you know. Like, they don't garner a lot of national attention, but especially when you have to go into Manhattan to play them, they always generally bring a good defense with them. Offense is hit or miss there, but, you know, they're going to stay in some games with that defense. I just don't know if 10 wins is realistic for them. I just don't think they have enough talent in that Big 12 to win 10 games, unless some other teams implode. But, you know, about an 8-win season in a middle-tier bowl game is about where Kansas State, I think, is going to be.
Huge fan of Bill Snyder, though, man. I mean, like you said, Rob, he's come back, rebuilt the program, man. So nothing but love. The old school coach, man, really good values, man, and he just does it right, man. So, again, maybe a little tough slated for them, but that's nothing but respect for Kansas State and Bill Snyder and the coaching staff, too, as well. So a lot of love.
They should be good in the trenches, so, you know, that's important. That's the one area where they should really be really good. Just like I said, the entire offensive line is coming back, and expect them to be really good on defense as well. Obviously, the rotating QBs and, you know, special teams are going to play a huge factor. But, I think 8-9 wins is still somewhat realistic for them this year.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. All right, man, let's kick it off. Thoughts on the preseason top 25 way too early. I think it's good, gentlemen, to kind of talk about the top five. You know, shout out. I know LSU's a little lower, Rob, at like around 22, but – interesting that they got Clemson number one, Alabama two, Ohio State, you know, Jake King's part of it, all that's happening. They're pretty up in the top five, mm-hmm. and then Georgia as well, too. So anything you want to talk about that, JQ, as we kind of kick you off with the preseason top 25?
I mean, I think you got your usual suspects there. And, it's surprising to me that they would not give Alabama the benefit of the doubt. You know, generally just Nick Saban going to have a good team. You generally give him the benefit of the doubt, but I'm not surprised that they got them up there. You talk about Clemson, you talk about Alabama's going to be loaded. Tua's going to take that starting job. I don't think Kelly Bryant's going to hold on to the starting job at Clemson. They got that, I forget the quarterback that's coming in. He's probably going to win that one. He's more of a pocket passer, and then they've got those beasts on the defensive line. They got to replace a lot of talent, but Dabo has been pretty good at replacing it, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Ohio State's got a good team. I mean, it just depends on the resolution of this, what happens. And can they get it done, you know, sooner rather than later, so they have some time before this first game to kind of get themselves together of, okay, let's take a deep breath, this is where we're going to be kind of standpoint. I'm surprised, you know, Georgia was in it, you know, a whisper hair away from winning the national championship last year. I feel like it was Georgia and Alabama last year for the title. You got to give them a lot of respect. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. And Kirby Smart doing his thing as well. So I'm not fully surprised. Your blue bloods up there are going to be in there in that top five. And, again, it's way too early until we see them play, you know, until you get to those heated rivalry games and those tough road games, you know, in October and in November. They were really going to tell. But right now, this is just a popularity contest.
Love it. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, and I agree, Andre. I'll focus on just the top five as opposed to the entire 25 as well. But Clemson, they have the opportunity to have the best defensive line in college football history this year. This team,
they look
like they possibly could have four first-rounders. This is going into the season, you know, as the season goes along, you know, draft prospects changes and things of that nature. But they could have the best defensive line that we've seen in college football in a very long time. They're that talented. Now, when you look at the quarterback position, as JQ mentioned, Trevor Lawrence, the five-star recruit, he has looked outstanding. He is going to push Kelly Bryant or even possibly take Kelly Bryant's position freshman year. He is that talented. He can make all the throws. He's got a lot of wow moments right there in the pocket. So look out for Trevor Lawrence. Obviously, you know, it depends on who the head coach is. Some coaches doesn't mind rotating quarterbacks. Some don't. I'm typically not a huge fan of that. But watch out for Trevor Lawrence there with Clemson and Kelly Bryant. I mean, Kelly Bryant, You saw him in the Sugar Bowl when he lost to Alabama. His body language was not that great. I mean, he was very good prior to that. But, I mean, like I said, look out for Trevor Lawrence at the quarterback position for Clemson. And I do believe Tua would take the position in Alabama. And Alabama's going to be Alabama before you know. I mean, they do have 12 NFL draft picks to replace. So they do have a lot of positions where they're going to have guys to step up. But we know the talent is there. And the cupboard is not bare there in Alabama. So I still expect some other names to rise to the occasion for Alabama and for them to be at the top again, as much as I hate them. But, hey, it is what it is. Ohio State.
Really quick, and Trevor Lawrence is from Cartersville, Georgia. If you ever look at a picture of him, he looks just like sunshine, man. Anyway, go ahead. It's hilarious.
Yes,
hilarious.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Rob.
I agree with that.
I had to go ahead, go ahead.
And when you look at Ohio State, obviously this is one of their more talented teams that you know they've ever had, so the talent is there. It's just a matter of how they're going to respond from this this Urban Meyer situation. Is Urban going to be the coach when they resume the season or not? So there's still a lot of questions there. That being said, when you look at their schedule, Ohio State is the more talented team than everybody on their schedule. I mean, they open at home with Oregon State and Rutgers. I don't care who the coach is. They should win those two games.
Yep.
Then they go at TCU. Could
That's
be challenging. At home against Tulane, easy win. At Penn State, Penn State's got some players that they need to replace. Some Saquon Barkley, the name one of them. So, I mean, I still think it's a doable win for Ohio State, even on the road. At home against Indiana, Minnesota, we can coach Ohio State to those wins. Ohio State at Purdue. Once again, we can go into Drew Brees, not a quarterback for Purdue. We can go on the road and coach that team too. Nebraska is going to be much improved. Not yet. Yeah. Ohio State's at home. Michigan State is the one that's going to be tough. They're going to be improved on defense, and to me, that could be the one where they can slip up on the road. Ohio State at Maryland, and then of course at home against Michigan. When you look at their schedule, I mean at TCU, at Michigan State, could be the challenging ones. But I just, in my opinion, if Urban Meyer is not the head coach, I just think they're going to slip up on one of those road victories. But other than that, if Urban is the coach, I think they have a chance to go. They got a chance to go undefeated. But I just see a one-game slip-up somewhere on the schedule just from the coaching standpoint. One of those road victories. I mean, they get Michigan at home again. They'll be ready to play for Michigan regardless. I just see a one road game slip-up possibly for Ohio State. So still look for them to have a very good year regardless of who's the head coach. And then when you look at Georgia, Georgia's in the same situation. Got a freshman phenom coming in. But I think in Georgia's situation, I think you're confident with Jake Fromm. I don't see Justin Fields coming in and beating him. I think if Georgia was smart, they'll try to see if they can convince him to redshirt and see if they can preserve his years a little bit more. But I think Trevor Lawrence actually has a really good chance to remove the reins from Kelly Bryant. Then we look at Oklahoma. Kyler Murray looks like he's ready to take the helm in Oklahoma. And they still look to be very, very talented, especially offensively. Rodney Anderson still back at the running back position. Defensively might be a slight concern to Oklahoma. I think they're still going to have to outscore people like they have the last few years. But they'll be able to do that against most opponents. I don't think they are a playoff team, but I do think they're definitely the best team in the Big 12 this year.
Here
but I just don't see a playoff caliber team. So I'll stop there with just those five teams.
That's good analysis.
You have anything to add to that, JQ? And since Bob Stoops is no longer my whipping boy, hopefully Nick Lincoln and Riley will do his thing. Go ahead, JQ.
Yeah, the only thing that scares the holy shit out of me, and I'm sorry for that, but it does.
is the fact that they said if Urban goes, guess who is the number one candidate for Ohio State to be the head coach? Bob freaking Stoops. I said, come on, man, not Bob Stoops. Please don't do that
what?
To me. So
are
this,
you
this, 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 yeah, I'm dead serious. He's from Ohio. You know, you got the name. He's got a title. And yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't want him to be my coach. I'm just telling you what it is. He's an Ohio boy, you know, that's coached at a big-time program in Oklahoma and won a title there, even though we feel like he's underachieved a lot. But they said he's in a category by himself to be the next head coach if he wants it, if Urban is gone. So take that what you will. And I agree with all of those things. I think Fromm has done enough for Georgia as a pocket passer. With another year, you can say, you know what, I can bring in packages for Fields. I'm going to roll with Fromm until he just shows me he's not that guy. Where with Kelly Bryant, he's just a running quarterback, and you don't have that pocket aspect. And to beat some of these other teams, you know, higher teams, especially when you saw in the college football playoffs, you're going to need that. So I can see Lawrence taking the job, maybe not initially fully, but I think as it wears on, and Kelly Bryant, if he doesn't, you know, progress as a pocket passer, then he's going to be in trouble. And then Ohio State, I agree, and that's an Ohio State bugaboo, if I'm being honest as a fan. They can beat who they're supposed to beat, but they'll catch one of those teams, you know, on a sleepy day in October, November, and fight. They can just put their uniform on and win, and they look up and they lose 55-24 to Iowa. You know what I mean? It's that kind of foolishness that they always have one time in the year where it's like, why are you even in this game with this team? So I can't really hate at that analysis from Rob because they generally do that. So I think it's wide open. And Oklahoma's got a lot of talent, but I feel like somebody's going to come steaming up through there that we're not going to see coming. Maybe it's LSU with Joe Burrows. Maybe it's Florida State with Willie Taggart. And you know, another year maybe of a Hansi Francois coming back from Florida State when people are not
Francois.
Really, you know, they're counting them out. You know, just giving it to Clemson. I just feel like there's going to be one party crasher that we never really can account for. It's just too early to tell who it is.
Yeah,
yep.
You just hope that Ohio State learned the lesson last year. That's why they didn't get a chance to play because of that controversial, you know, loss, if you will, too. But I mean, it's just, you know, they got a lot of things happening this off season, man. So like Rob said,
yes, they do.
Easily one of the most talented teams. But again, you have to get through all the diversity and the adversity. So if they can do that, it definitely will make for an interesting story, to say the least, too. But like Rob said, Clemson got that dynamic. You know, defensive line.
The defense.
I mean, woo,
yeah.
Woo.
I mean, and, you know, I just talked about the front four with Clemson, but their back seven ain't no slouch either. They got a couple of draft picks in their back seven as well. So, I mean, they're going to be really good defensively, really good. I mean, they're going to be definitely be a tough out this year. So expect them to be back in the playoffs again, in my opinion. And obviously, the Gumps are going to be there, you know, but they're there every year, unfortunately. But, you know, so you expect those two teams to be right there in the hunt again. And like we said, Georgia, Kirby Smart's got a great thing going right now from a recruiting standpoint and a coaching standpoint. So we definitely expect another Alabama. Well, actually, it was Auburn in Georgia in the SEC Championship last year. But expect Alabama and Georgia to be in the SEC Championship game.
I'm surprised you're not giving more love to LSU. LSU has always had all the talent on defense, on offense. They just couldn't get a freaking quarterback. If Joe Burrows can go in there and take that job and just be adequate, you know, not lose games for that LSU team, LSU could be that party crasher. They could be this year's Auburn. They got skill position players. They always stay with some horses on defense. They just couldn't find a quarterback. They might have one. I don't know if he's going to do it. And I don't know if Coach O is going to be able to, you know, put himself up there with the upper echelon coaches in terms of the X's and O's kind of mentality. He gets some good fired up, but, you know, come game time, there's only so much firing up you can do. You still got to have some strategy and be able to pull some strings and whatnot. So that's to me, that's the question mark for LSU, but I still feel like they got a ton of talent to be a party crasher. I really do.
Well, here's the deal when you're talking about LSU here. I'm from Missouri. You got to show me. And show me. They're going to have to show me at the quarterback position. And LSU, one of their strengths coming into this season was offensive line. They're supposed to have one of the top offensive lines in the country. And now they just suspended one of their right guards on offensive line, Ed Ingram.
Mm.
So I don't know if he's going to be done for the year or if it's a short-term suspension. I'm not really sure. Ed Orgeron is not really talking about that. So now you just took a blow from one of the strengths on your team. And also, you know, LSU, the running back position has been a strength at LSU for our Shucks mm-hmm. for a long, long time. I mean, Les Miles kept four or five running backs deep. One of the few things he did well, you know, so they kept great running backs. And now this year, running back is a question mark. And so we don't have the stable of running backs that we've had in years past. So that's not only the quarterback a question mark, but running back is also a question mark for LSU. I mean, hopefully they can replace Evgeny Engram. Like I said, it was supposed to be a strength on the team. Expect the defense to be very good and fast again this year. But yeah, the talent-wise, it's there. Wide receiver position, they are loaded. But you got to have the quarterback, of course. And if Joe Burrows can step in, I mean, it would be phenomenal. Talent-wise, as you mentioned, JQ, the talent is there. It's still a question mark at QB. And like I said, this year is even a question mark at running back.
Well, the thing about it is running back is one of the, to me, is one of the easier ones to have somebody flash and come on like, gosh, this guy came out of nowhere and can lift the team up. I agree with the offensive line. You got to have the offensive line that continuity. And, again, Joe Burrow is still a question mark. I just, you know, all those things that talk about our party crashes are going to have some warts. And it's going to have to play itself out to where can you gloss those warts over? Are they not really warts? They're perceived warts they were coming into the season. But once you start playing, it's like, okay, we undersold this guy, you know what I mean, this position group. So, you know, you're going to have that kind of piece with it with all of those, you know, teams in the 6 to 15 kind of range of, you know, they got some things they got to work on. But I'm just saying LSU always has a ton of talent. They just haven't had a quarterback. So if Joe can just go in and be adequate, let's just be honest, you know, he doesn't have to be the reason they win, but he can't be the reason they lose. And that's what's been happening for LSU quarterback, in my opinion, watching from afar. So if he can not be that to the team, they got a better shot.
Well, I mean, obviously, I'll be rooting like heck for him, but, you know, like I said, at the same time, it's until you show me, that's just kind of where we are with it, you know, in my opinion. Auburn, as
you
mentioned, Auburn, Jared Stenham, you know, really came on strong last year, too, so expect them to be very solid as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, SEC.
Keep it going. Keep it going. Talk about our LSU, man. That's my Atlantis Falcon, you know, farm system, man. So keep talking about our squad, Rob. Keep it going, man. I love to hear about you know, what we got coming up, man.
You like you said, from a defensive standpoint, I mean, LSU's got a chance to have two first-rounders on defense. Greedy Williams at cornerback position. He's got great length
love
at the cornerback
name.
Position. He's greedy is the perfect name. He is definitely greedy for the football. He's always around it. You know, he's got great ball skills, so he gets a lot of interceptions. And I mean, look at him to be. Even though he's going to be a redshirt sophomore, he will be eligible for the draft. He'll be 3 years removed from high school. You know, has the opportunity to be a first round pick. And then, of course, middle linebacker Devin White is also right there in the mix for possibly being a first-round pick. And then they have some other younger players that has a chance to really shine this year. So defensively, they will be good once again. That's not going to be the question mark for this LSU team. They will be loaded on defense yet again.
Okay,
I don't think his real name
LSU
is Greedy. It's like Slim Pickens over there. Hey, but last thing, I do agree with Rob, though, regarding the running backs, because after, you know, Leonard Fournette, you would think there's like, just running backs, you know, running back you, and it's kind of challenging. They don't really have, like, that, as we talked about, too. So, all good. We'll move on here, because JQ, I know I got it. Let's talk about Big 12 here. So we kind of mentioned it before with Oklahoma. It's probably, you know, they're obviously in the top five. So they're, and Rob mentioned it as far as being the top school. But yeah, kind of talk about, you know, where Texas is at, West Virginia. I mean, how great their offense is. You got, Oklahoma State, TCU, Kansas, Ohio State, Baylor. And Texas Tech. Got a pretty big squad. What's the you as far as the predictions as far as that, CJQ?
I think it's Oklahoma to lose. Last year we were high on Oklahoma State, but they lost all those guys and Mason Rudolph. Just to seal out the backfield, and gosh, I forget the wide receiver's name. He's also a stud. Those guys are all gone, I believe, for Oklahoma State. So I take them, get them to come a step back. I think Oklahoma, you talked about with Kyle Murray, I think they still just have recruited, you know, just phenomenally. and they're going to be there. I think that's the Big 12 is theirs to lose. The one team I keep an eye on, and you know me, I'm a quarterback kind of person, and that's TCU because of Kenny Hill. I'm not sure if that defense is going to necessarily be able to hold up all the way. But,
well, Kenny Hill is gone now.
Is he?
Yeah.
I think so.
Sean Robinson, he's a true sophomore. He's going to be the starting quarterback with TC this year. But still, he even has a lot of potential. But, yeah, Kenny Hill is gone.
Let me check that out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then I take that back. It's Oklahoma. It's Oklahoma for me.
All the way in.
Oh, yeah, no, he's down with Montreal all the way.
Strong.
Yep, sorry.
Well,
you got it, yeah.
Wow. Oklahoma is definitely the favorite to win. In the Big 12, in my opinion. Obviously, you know, you lose some big-time players in Baker Mayfield, Orlando Brown, Michael Andrews, of course. You still got running back Rodney Anderson. Kyler Murray actually was top 10 pick in Major League Baseball draft. You know, some expect him only to be his only playing year at Oklahoma. We don't know that for sure. He definitely will play this year. But as I mentioned a little bit earlier, offensively, Oklahoma is going to be loaded yet again. Lincoln Riley is a great offensive mind. They're going to score a lot of points offensively. Defensively, this is not going to be the strength of this team this year, like you've seen a lot of times under Bob Stoops. I expect it to be somewhere in the middle of the pack when it comes to defensively. They're going to outscore a lot of opponents. As I mentioned, I don't think this is a playoff team, but I do think this team will win the Big 12. So I think this be a team that will win their conference but will not make it to the playoffs would be my opinion of Oklahoma. Like I said, I think the defense is somewhere in the middle of the pack. I mean, even last year they were 87th against the pass. Everybody in the Big 12 throws the football a lot too, so that could be one of the reasons why as well. But expect them, like I said, to be kind of a middle of the pack defensively, but still they will outscore most opponents. TCU is still the main contender. I think if anybody has a chance to upseat Oklahoma, it is TCU. Even with Kenny Hill being gone, Sean Robinson is going to be the starting quarterback, former four-star recruit. And this is a guy that at Alabama and Clemson was also recruiting, dual threat in that offense. So look for him to come in and take the reins. And TCU, one thing you know about this team, out of all the teams in the Big 12, they always have the best defense in that conference. So that defense is going to keep them in a lot of games. I mean, for the last 6 years, TCU's defense has always been either first or second in that conference. I think Texas is still climbing. I think they're the third best team in the conference. They're obviously getting better and better, but I still don't think they're there just yet. Offensively, they got six returning starters. Sam Ehrlinger is going to be starting at the quarterback position, so they're getting settled there with him starting at the quarterback position 2 years in a row. And West Virginia also, you know, could be in the next tier. Will Grier at the quarterback position. David Steele is at the wide receiver position. Look for them as well. Look for Oklahoma State to fall to the middle of the pack. They're losing quite a bit, obviously losing Mason Rudolph here. So look for them to kind of fall to the middle of the pack. The only good thing about Oklahoma State, Justin Hill, running back position, ran for over 1,400 yards last year. He's going to be back. And Kansas State's right there in the middle, along with Iowa State and Texas Tech. And obviously, bringing up the rear, Baylor and Kansas will be awful. And probably the only wins that they'll have will be whoever wins when they play against each other.
Oh! Send all your emails to Rob at
Talking
Sports with the
in the conference, that is. You know, they may win their cupcake games, but in the conference, the only win that Baylor and Kansas will have, or whoever wins when they play against each other.
I agree with that. Baylor is gone life support after that whole, you know, that happened down there on campus. So yeah, they was close to getting the death zone. That's hard to rebound from. So I agree. Kansas is just bad at football. They're only there because they have a good basketball program. Their football program is trash. It's going to be trash. They continue to be trash. It is what it is.
Did Baker Mayfield say about them last year? basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's all they
got.
Wow.
All right, we're moving right along, gentlemen. We got 50 minutes here for the OT portion. Let's talk really quickly about Odell Beckham. Should he be a Giant for life? What do you think about that, Rob?
I don't know about a Giant for life. I think I think in the moment, I think he's done enough, even though he's coming off of an injured season, I think he's done enough to deserve to get a nice contract at the moment to stay with the Giants. I mean, like I said, I don't know what the next 2 to 3, 4 years will look like for an offer for him to stay with the New York Giants. So I don't know if I agree with, you know, he should be a Giant for life. I think it was David Deal who made that comment. But, you know, I think definitely he's deserving of getting the contract extension. I think this is the final year of his contract. Even though he is coming off of an injury, I think he's shown enough, you know, from as far as being one of the better wide receivers in the league when healthy. So, yeah, I definitely deserves to be a Giant at the moment.
Yeah, I would agree. My only caveat is he's got to find a way to just tone it down a little bit. And I think New Yorkers, they like a big personality, especially when you produce on the field. They love it even more. You look back like a Lawrence Taylor, for instance. They loved that he was a bad boy, but he would get on the field and he would wreck shop. And the reason why I say also for on the field is that he opens it up for everybody else. So now you've got Saquon, who can do all the things we talked about before leading up into the draft and when we talked about Penn State, you know, in the previous couple of years. Now you got him in the backfield. You got a Shepherd. You got an Evan Ingram. But it's really Odell Beckham that makes all that work. So you can't crowd the box to stop Saquon because Odell's back there out there. Unless you got a, you know, an upper echelon cornerback where you feel comfortable putting him out there, you got to have a safety over top to give him help. So now that has a freer box for Saquon Barkley. Now you have Evan Ingram who doesn't have to worry about that safety so much because he's over the top of Odell, being able to work across the middle. You got Shepherd on the other side, you know, to be that other complement. If Eli can just go back to a couple years ago, Eli, I'm not even talking about prime Eli, but just not horrible Eli with all the weapons they're surrounding him with, and I think that defense is good enough to be good. They're one of those teams that always – that every year we see somebody that's bad jump up into the – maybe not the Super Bowl picture, but into the playoff picture fray. They could be one of those teams in a very low to NFC because they've got a lot of things in place. They just have to get some confident quarterback play and stay healthy. But, yes, I agree. For what Odell does for that offense and what – He epitomizes a New York Giant or Yankee player in his, you know, larger-than-life persona and this, that, and the other. He's just got to find a way just to tone it down just a little bit. You can't be in there with the coke and the weed and the Instagram video. You know what I mean? Like, you can't do that. Yes, that's too far. Just pull it back a little bit, and I would agree with that statement.
Nice. All right. Making progress, gentlemen. Let's keep this going here. Let's talk about Lamar Jackson, his preseason debut. Interesting for sure. Do you want to comment, start out with that one, JQ?
Excuse me. Yeah, it was meh. You know what I mean? Like, and I think the piece of it is that we were so hyped on him. We seen what he does in Louisville. And you think he's just going to go out there and take it by storm. You got to realize him as a grown man out there trying to make a team, too, on both sides. And he just looked pedestrian, I guess is the word I'm looking for. You know, he showed some flashes, but that interception was god-awful. Throwing it late and throwing it to the inside. You know, luckily the dude they took it back to the house. It's just, you know, some good things with some bad things as well. And I know he's not playing with the stars on that Baltimore team, but he looked like a rookie. You know what I mean? He looked like a rookie making his debut, trying to still figure it all out. I still think he's going to be really good in the long run. Yeah, I think he's going to be really good in the long run. But it's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like everybody take a breath. You know, we've seen, you know, the Deshaun Watsons and the people coming around taking it by storm, and you think that everybody's going to do that. And that's just not always the case. He could still be successful. I think he will be. Just one of those performances that says, okay, pump the brakes. He just needs a little bit more time.
Nice. On you, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's hard to judge him off of that one preseason game. Obviously, you can tell that the confidence and the comfort level was not there just yet. So he still has a ways to go from an NFL perspective. You can tell that his footwork was still a little bit shaky as well. So obviously the coaching standpoint, his comfort level was just not there yet. And obviously his accuracy was kind of erratic in that game as well. I mean, he showed a few flashes, but he definitely still has a long way to go. And I think Joe Flacco is definitely safe of being a starting quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens at this point. But obviously the potential is still there. We'll have to wait and see, you know, how it grows. But like I said, you know, that game is no indication, I think, of what his career will be like. He just still has a ways to go, that's all.
And Joe Flacco danced on the inside like, yes. he may not say it, but you know what I mean. He was like,
yeah.
you can't say it out loud, but I know in the side he was like, yeah, hell yeah. Goddamn.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just takes some time for him to get to that. I mean, you know, Lamar, he's just a rookie, man. So, I mean, again, I mean, you hear the total difference between what's happening with Baker Mayfield and that, too. So, but, you know, like I said, take your time, bro, learn, and we'll get there, too, for sure, because he can be an exciting player. All right, gentlemen, we got like 10 minutes here. Let's talk about really quickly the thoughts on the new NFL head helmet rule, if I can talk, Rob. Go ahead, man.
To me, I think some verbiage on it still needs to be addressed and changed here, because I think in some cases, this leading with the head thing may not be the case, but it's going to look like it on a lot of tackles, just because of, you know, some movements of offensive player may make and things of that nature as well. I think some verbiage needs to be changed on this rule. I don't necessarily like it. I think the rules that we've had in last year were good enough, and even that one needed to be tweaked a little bit more. And I know safety is our first concern, and it should be our first concern when it comes from the player standpoint. But I just think they're going to be some football moves that are made that the players are not intended to lead with the helmet, but it's going to look like it on some plays. And that's, I think some verbiage needs to be, the spearing thing, I understand that. That needs to be in the place. But I just think some of the new terminology that they've had, I'm not necessarily a fan of it. I do think we should be concerned about safety and addressing safety when it comes to football. But to me, I think there are some challenges with the new rule that they have in place, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the intent of what they were trying to do with the rule. I understand that, especially when you have all the CTE and the concussions and all that good stuff that should rightfully be addressed. I agree with the intent of the rule. But, yeah, that's going to be a headache to try to officiate consistently. Because as a player, when you hear them talk about it, they just want to know how it's going to be officiated. They want you to be consistent, like in baseball. If you're going to always give an inch off the outside, at least I know that going into it, I can plan for that. You know what I mean? So if you don't know from week to week or from hit to hit within the game what's legal and what's not, that's going to be hard. And then if you, like we saw, I'm sorry to bring it up, we saw if you make a hesitation and you whiff, that dude can turn around and take it to the house. You know what I mean? So we don't want it to alter the flow of the game. Like, man, a year ago, 2 years ago, he would have made that tackle no problem. But you could see him thinking it, not trying to get a penalty. And it's so bad now that Roquan Smith is still not signed with the Bears because they're trying to put that language in his contract about that. And that's why he's not signed it. And, I mean, so you got an effect of that rule before we have even played a meaningful game. Now, I'm not talking about the Hall of Fame game. That wasn't meaningful for real. I mean, a regular season meaningful game, and you already have controversy about this rule. So I agree with you, Rob. They're going to have to – I don't know if they're going to admit to it this soon, but I think it's going to be a problem this year, and they're going to have to address it again this offseason. The NFL is slow to change a rule before games have been played or midway through a season. So they're going to get a year's worth of data on it, but I think it's going to be enough where they're going to have to look back and say, okay, we tried to do the right thing, but this is not working.
Yep, I agree.
Very nice. Good. All right, good deal. 6 minutes, guys. Let's keep it going here. And I'm going to ask some questions too whenever we talk about the new helmet rule. I was watching the Hall of Fame stuff, and I just want to – you don't have to answer now, but just think about this whenever we talk about that. I mean, could a player like Ray Lewis now play in today's league? It's something to think about. I mean, because there's a lot of his hit. I mean, that dude was a ferocious hitter. And you wonder if his style of play would actually, you know, would he even be relevant now? It's just crazy, man. You look at how the game is. Not to say that's a problem. We definitely want safety in the game for sure. I get all that. But I wonder if it's going to affect how things are going to move forward, how the game is going to be played too. So let's talk about that. Again, let's talk about Tom Brady. Should he concentrate or focus on football now, Rob?
Well, I think the question was more is Tom Brady focused on football at the moment? And here's
not
the
bad
deal. I think
that.
Tom Brady's 41 years old. He's played a lot of football. And I think, you know, he tried to spend a little bit more time this offseason with family and now focus. I think when it's time to lace him up, Tom Brady will be ready to go. And so I'm not too concerned about him taking a little extra time this offseason to spend with family. And I think he's earned that right based on what he's accomplished for that organization and what he's done in the National Football League. I think he's earned that right. I wouldn't be concerned if you're a Patriots fan about Tom Brady, even at 41 years old. He's giving his body a little extra time to rest. You know he's going to be in tip-top shape. You know, his eating habits are very stringent.
Maniacal.
Yes, I wish I had that kind of discipline.
Right,
but,
exactly.
Yeah, his eating habits are very stringent, so I don't think you should have anything to worry about if you're a Patriot fan. I think the only thing you should worry about is when will Father Time actually catch up with them. But him actually taking a little bit of extra time this offseason, I wouldn't be concerned about that just yet, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. As much as I hate Tom Brady, he's forgotten more football than most people probably in the NFL even know. So he's definitely earned that right in terms of, you know, his body of work and what he's done and meant to that organization and really to the league as a cash cow. So if he wants to spend some more time with his kids and, you know, his you know, supermodel wife, then, because you know, for all the things that Rob just said, he said when it's time to lace him up, he's going to be there. He's taking care of himself, and that's the number one thing about it. He's not out in the streets, you know what I'm saying, eating corn dogs and chips. You're like, come on, Tom Brady. You got to rein it in. Oh.
Yeah, and
he's taking care of himself health-wise, his body. If he was letting himself go while he was taking time away from his family, if I was the Patriots fans, I'd be like, yeah, maybe we should have kept Garoppolo because he is just tripping. But the fact that he does all these things with his family, but like you said, you know, he's eating the avocado ice cream and all this other wild shit that nobody else would even heard of or even thought to do.
Wow.
He's been doing it for years and still doing it. It's true, avocado ice cream. So, you know, it's that piece of him taking care of his body that if I was a fan, like, if you go take care of your body and the competitor that I know you are as a Patriots fan, I wouldn't worry about it too much. You just, sometimes when you get older, you just need a little longer to recharge your batteries. That's all it is.
Nice. I love it. All right, gentlemen, we officially got about 3 minutes here. I definitely want to talk, get some time in about the teams, the top or the seven teams that can make the Super Bowl. But I do want to talk about the Hall of Fame stuff, too. So let's kind of get ready, Rob. Let's end it for the OT portion. We'll roll right into seven teams, and we'll kind of end it from there, too. So go ahead with that, bro.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we still got a lot more sports talk remaining. Unfortunately, we can't give it all to you on the live portion of our show. We still got a lot of NFL to talk about. We got some great predictions coming off with the AFC East and AFC North. We're going to knock out two divisions this week. And upcoming here, we got to have upcoming shows. We'll get the AFC South and AFC West in there and start getting into our playoff and Super Bowl predictions. Hearing some shows here before the regular season gets started. And also we have more college football predictions. We got the Big 12 out of the way tonight. Obviously, we got some more major conferences coming up in the Pac-12, SEC, the Big 10, even though there's 14 teams in the conference, and then also the ACC as well. So we're going to get those major conferences covered here in upcoming shows and get you ready more for the college football season. As well, we also got some NBA to talk about here on our OT portion. So on our OT portion, we still got some NFL and we got some NBA to cover. So you want to click on the same link on tomorrow and get the rest of the show. Give us your feedback and let us know if you agree with us, disagree with us, you like the show. We'd love to hear from you and get your feedback. All right, good night. We're going to be back on the air next Sunday night again. That's going to be August 12th, same time, same channel, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central. 8 p.m. Pacific. That's a lot. Good night, people.
and you have to bear with me next week because I'll probably still be a little hungover because, yes, I will have, my birthday will be next Saturday. But thank you, people, for listening to the show. Please download it and listen to the OT portion.
Been hungover.
Hey, shush. So we can listen to us talk about the NBA and NFL. And I promise I'm going to try to get them to talk about Kelvin Benjamin because, damn, I read that, and I said, I didn't even know Kelvin Benjamin was that kind of dude. He threw Cam under the bus with pure gasoline. All I could do was laugh out loud, like, good Lord. So please tune in. Yeah, man. Yeah, right. And then he threw him off the side of the bridge. So appreciate y'all listening to it. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit more in depth. Maybe not. But we always appreciate the love. Holler at you next week.
Yeah, and our anniversary is on the 12th, too, man. So we should be able to pull it off, but I'm gonna make sure I'm not getting in trouble too. So stay tuned about that. But we should be good. All right. we are officially jumping. We got 22 seconds, but let's kind of kick it off with the seven teams that can win the Super Bowl. JQ, your thoughts on that?
Oh, man. I can go. I mean, the NFC is loaded, and it's hard to kind of pare down the NFC. I'm going to start in the AFC because I think there's three teams and that we would say, okay, for me, given what's happened. One of them is Pittsburgh. I hate to say it, but as long as Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell are there and playing, they're always going to be a problem. The same thing as long as Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are in New England, they're going to be a problem. I'm going to include Jacksonville on that list because that Jacksonville defense, we talked about that Clemson defense in college, that Jacksonville defense is ferocious, and I think they're going to still be as good, if not better, next year. The thing about them is Blake Bortles. Can he not lose games for them? You talk about Fournette in that backfield. So I like that Jacksonville team, up-and-coming team. They just are nasty on defense. And then when I head to the NFC, you know, I'm going to throw in, we talked about, you know, the Saints and the Falcons. I think they are legitimately in there as two of them. You got to go with the Eagles as well for a third team. I'm not really so right. Yeah, well, the Rams have added a lot to it as well. So I think I'm at seven now. And then I'm not sure about that NFC North. That Minnesota defense really got shredded down the stretch last year. And I'm not quite sure if they're going to be able to go back to that. I think they're good offensively with Kirk Cousins in that wide receiver and tight end group. And then you get Delvin Cook back to 100%. He gives them another weapon. But I just don't know. And to crack that NFC is going to be tough. I just don't know if their defense is up to par. And then I have to include Green Bay just because they have Aaron Rodgers. And when you have a transcendent quarterback talent like that, with any kind of talent around him, he's going to have a chance. I don't think they're going to really be all that great on defense either. So, you know, I got seven, and I got, you know, like Spades, I got seven and a couple possibles.
Go ahead. I love it. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, what I did with the seven here, I took who I thought were the top three from each conference, and then I had a hard time picking that seven team. So I'll start with the AFC, and I had the exact same three teams. Obviously, the Patriots, you still got Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and I actually think they have an opportunity to even be better than what they were last year, too, as long as Father Time hasn't caught up with Tom Brady yet. And the Pittsburgh Steelers, for all the same reasons JQ mentioned, when you got the big three there, Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, as long as those three guys are there and healthy, they're going to be in the mix, and the same the Jacksonville Jaguars. Defensively, I mean, from a personnel standpoint, defensively, this could be one of the best defenses we've seen in the NFL in a long time. They have that much talent. But when you talk about the defensive line, every level of the defense, defensive line, the linebacker corps, the two cornerbacks, oh, my goodness. Man, they have studs at every level of that defense. And Leonard Fournette, and the offensive line is going to be much better even this year. And you still got Leonard Fournette back there. And you're going to be better at the wide receiver position this year, too. So it's just a matter of can Blake Bortles do enough to get them there. And really, when you look at their football team, he's the only question mark. Running back, wide receiver, offensive line, and all the defense. When you look at the personnel outside of quarterback, they have better personnel than the Patriots and the Steelers when you look at it other than the quarterback position. Their personnel is that good. They're that scary. Mm-hmm. And they, in my opinion, they are a legitimate Super Bowl contender in the AFC and the NFL altogether. You know, it's just how much can Blake Bortles improve. And, you know, the quarterback position is worth a lot. And so that's the reason why, you know, Roethlisberger and Brady will keep the Patriots and the Steelers in the mix. But like I said, from a personnel standpoint, Jacksonville has a better overall roster than those two teams. So that's scary. Yeah. When you go to the NFC, my big three are the Saints, the Rams, and the Eagles. The Rams, obviously. when you look at what they have done defensively to improve over the offseason, and even, you know, Brandon Cooks, I'm still not quite sure he's a number one receiver, but he gives them another threat. He gives them a deep threat to go along with Todd Gurley and that offense as well. So they, to me, are the favorites in the NFC at the moment. What I think, and I think the Saints and the Eagles are right behind them. The Saints defensively, I think they got better this offseason as well after showing some of the improvement that you saw last year. And quiet as it kept, I think the Saints have gotten better at the wide receiver position this offseason too. Obviously they have to overcome Ingram being out for four games. So we'll see how that goes. Then, of course, the defending champion, the Eagles. Now, it was tough for me to pick that 17, but it came down to the same two as JQ talked about. It's either the Packers or the Falcons to be right there in the mix for, you know, the Packers, I think. You know, you're getting a healthy Aaron Rodgers back. I think they've made some improvements to their defense this year. They're one of the starting offensive tackles just got a sprained ankle, but it looks as though he may be back. Yeah. I didn't want to try to pronounce his name.
Nice.
But it looks like, you know, I think he'll be back for the start of regular season, so it doesn't look to be that major with the sprained ankle. But I think, you know, if you talk about that 17, to me is one of those two teams. I think the Packers jumped the Vikings in the NFC. And I think the Falcons, and once again, like I said, could be right there in contention for that 17.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice, Gerald. And I appreciate you being objective too, man. So I know we talked about last week, JQ always goes or defers to quarterback, and that's a fair comparison too. So good call. And the only reason why I don't add a lot to that is because we'd be here like to 2 o'clock if I added all my thoughts on everything too. So we're good. I try to keep things brief and concise. Really quickly, I know we do want to mention what happened with, if you don't mind, Rob, we're going to kind of take a little detour here and just kind of talk about what Kelvin Benjamin said about Cam Newton. We kind of joked, kind of threw on the bus, talk about if he would have had a more of an accurate quarterback, you know, if he just Cam wasn't that dude. It's just crazy. I will actually say that sometimes a lot of stuff is sour grapes. And Steve Smith is actually on NFL Network kind of talking about that, the fact that what somebody that's coming, it took him 4 years to kind of get where he started, a couple years in the league, he came to shape or came to camp overweight. He didn't put himself in the position to be successful was kind of the gist from what Steve Smith was saying. And I kind of agree with that, man. Mm-hmm. You can't talk about the quarterback or talk about the person in general whenever you're not right. I could see if you're like Jerry Rice, you're putting in the work, and then you're like, yo, this is not right. But you're not even putting in the work, man. So it's just one of those crazy things that was said, throwing some shade. So what do you think about that, Rob, real quick?
The Kelvin Benjamin situation?
Yeah, Kelvin Benjamin, 100%, yep.
Well, I mean, I thought he was definitely out of line with these comments. And I agree with Sean McDermott going to have a conversation with him on it. Because right now you play for the Buffalo Bills, and that should be where your focus is. And there's no reason to go to the media and blast Cam Newton, the Panthers. You're with the Buffalo Bills now. And the bottom line is, do you see the record with Kelvin Benjamin versus without Kelvin Benjamin? It's a lot better without Kelvin Benjamin. So when you look at what the Panthers, the record they Cam Newton has had without Kelvin Benjamin versus with them. So, I mean, to me, the joke is on Kelvin Benjamin. When you look at how successful Cam Newton has been able to be without him, I think they were either like at 500 or under 500 with Kelvin Benjamin versus an astronomical winning percentage without him. And so, to me, the joke is on him. He probably didn't get the job done. And I know sometimes the perception when you have a mobile quarterback, it really hurts the receiver stats. And I think there's some truth to that. But I think in general, the Panthers have had more success without Kelvin Benjamin. And we saw that with Dez Bryant when Romo got hurt and Dak Prescott came in. You saw that his productivity is going down too quite often. But, I mean, like I said, the Panthers have still had more success without Kelvin Benjamin. Show me what you're going to do with them rookies you got up there in Buffalo before you start bashing Cam Newton.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just a lot to go through. One, he was so quiet that I never would have thought that he would have popped off like that. So that's what took me so much by surprise. I was like, wow, you, Kelvin? Like, you always seem out there, and yeah, he came there looking like, you know, like an armchair to training camp, so out of shape, you know, like a love seat. Like, what are you doing, man? You got to get yourself together. You came out here talking about people looking like that, you know, walking in looking like Queen Latifah. Like, come on, buddy, get it together. But the flip side of that is that I believe that Cam Newton is only over 60%. He's only been over 60% twice in his year for a season. His rookie year and I believe in 2011 or 12. He's got a career 58.2 completion percentage. So there is some truth to what Kelvin Benjamin said. But like you said, you play for Buffalo. You don't play for Carolina anymore. You know, that shouldn't even concern you anymore. You have time left to not resurrect your career, but to have a good, decent career if you put the time into it. Don't worry about Cam. So, I mean, that's like I see both sides. Like, he's right, but that's definitely not the way to go about it. She's like, he's not even your quarterback. You don't have to worry about him anymore. Why even say that? Just go out there and be productive and let your play speak for itself. And if your numbers trend up when you get a better quarterback, then you let the media and everybody else say that for you, that, oh, he would have had a better couple of years if not for this, this, and this. So, I mean, that was just my two cents. I just found it hilarious, and I was just like, wow, you know. And then the last piece, I'm sorry, is that I feel like people, it's almost like that LeBron thing. Like, I don't feel like a lot of people like Cam Newton. You know what I mean? Like, he seems to rub people the wrong way. And now you get an ex-team to come out and pops off about him. Yeah, it's like, is Cam one of those a-holes that we talk about? He might be, because it doesn't really seem like people won't, even on his team, and now ex-teammates don't like him very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
good call.
You know, obviously the Panthers are a rival of the Saints, so I don't like the Panthers. So obviously it's very hard for me to root from Cam Newton from that perspective. But, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think these comments were justifiable by Kelvin Benjamin, in my opinion.
Get off that stuff, by the way, mm-hmm. Kelvin. All right, let's continue here because we got to get to a couple more topics here. And as briefly as we can talk about, we'll talk about T.O. And the whole thing with the Hall of Fame. And I don't think it's going to impact his legacy so much. This is probably, from my perspective, we talked about this before, that terrible decision, you know, no matter how mad you were, mm-hmm. you got to let that stuff go, man. And he missed out on so much, the pageantry, the legends. I mean, he's going to probably look back like 20 years now, like, why did I do that, you know, and – you know, mm-hmm. that's kind of punishment mm-hmm. enough as far as what happened to man, because that's terrible. And he's one of the greatest wide receivers, 100%. But this is how he went about it. It's not going to affect his legacy, but just a dumb decision. I think it's terrible. If he will. And everyone embraces him, too. They're like, hey, welcome back. But it's nothing like being there. That's so bad decision to you. What do you think about that, JQ?
Yeah, I don't disagree with it. It's a bad decision, but I disagree with one thing. I don't think in 20 years he's going to think he did the wrong thing. He's one of those people that thing goes back and says, you know what, I did it my way. To me, it's not tarnishing of his legacy. Yeah, he's just a different cat. I don't think it tarnishes his legacy. To me, it's the definition of his legacy. This is who he is. This is who he's always been. If he had done anything else, I might have been more surprised. You know what I mean? He was pissed he didn't get in first ballot, and he took it this route. I'm not shocked at all that he did that. I disagree with it. Don't get me wrong. But I'm not shocked about it. To me, this is another example of, you want to know who T.O. is, he does this, he does this, he does this, he does this. It's just another one of those stories and those bullet points in the line of examples of who T.O. is. So, to me, you know, if he had fun with it, that's on him. Yes, that's great. But you guys got to understand that it's bigger than you. There's players before you, players after you, you know, players with you right now. Such a star-studded class. You know, he should have been there for it. And it takes a little bit away from it, but that's who T.O. is. So, that, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. Both of you all make some really good points about that. Obviously, I would have preferred him to be at the actual ceremony. And I know he was trying to send a message. But I actually liked the speech he gave at Chattanooga, though. I mean, I thought, you know, for the most part, he was professional and he gave some really good points. With that being said, I still would have preferred him to be at the actual ceremony. It is, you know, quite an accomplishment. And, I mean, whether he should have been a first ballot, second ballot, third ballot Hall of Famer, you know, but I think it's still quite an accomplishment. But I also thought, you know, he did a really good job on his speech at Chattanooga and gave some really, you know, interesting points and things of that nature. So he believed in something. He stood up for it. And I'm not going to knock him as much as I initially did. I'll just say that. But I still would have preferred him to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Not the best decision. I mean, 100%. I mean, I didn't even watch what he said. But just I get both points of that for sure. All right, gentlemen, let's really quickly get into the AFC East predictions here. So lead us off with that, Rob, real quick.
Well, obviously, we don't have to spend too much time on this one. Patriots,
mm-mm.
Patriots, 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 Patriots. This will be the easiest division to predict out of all the divisions. And let's just be real here. The rest of the division sucks. This
mm-hmm.
outside of the Patriots, this might be the worst division in football.
Well,
because
I think
the Jets
might be a little better than you think.
Well,
they may
be competitive. They're
going
to be competitive, but they're going to be still a distant second behind the Patriots, in my opinion. They're going to be competitive because of defense, Todd Bowles.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for them to really be, I mean, let's face it. I mean, should we really expect Sam Darnold to lead this team to 10 victories in his rookie season? I just think that's unrealistic to think that. So I think they can be a competitive team with 6 to 9 wins this year. I mean, they'll be a team that's, you know, going to compete and be in the dogfights. But, I mean, let's just be real here. Whether it's Josh McCown, whether it's Sam Darnold, and then the lack of weapons on offense, too. And, or Teddy Bridgewater, whoever you want to look at it here. Defense is going to keep them competitive. But I think they're a distant second-place team in this division that can be competitive. And then when you look at the Buffalo Bills, Josh Allen is having a rough time in training camp, can't hit the side of a barn. So he's still got to work on the accuracy level when it comes to the Buffalo. And, I mean, that team that made it to the playoffs last year, I mean, did that look like a playoff team to you?
No.
It certainly didn't. I mean, the Saints went up there and trucked them like 47-10, and that's the team that made the playoffs. And to me, they got in the playoffs, but they didn't necessarily look like a playoff team last year. And now, like I said, you still question that the quarterback position. I think the Bills are in third place. And Miami, they getting Ryan Tannehill back, but they depleted the rest of the roster. I think they're the last place team in the division. Even with Ryan Tannehill come back. I don't know if this is a total rebuild or are they tanking like they say in the NBA, but they depleted the entire roster in Miami. So, I mean, Jarvis Landry is gone and Dominican Sue is gone. I mean, I don't see nothing there. And you got a quarterback that's coming off an injury. So, to me, outside of the Patriots, this could be the worst division in football.
I've got nothing to add to that. He's 100% right on all of that. I just think the Jets are going to – I say that about the Jets in terms of you're going to know you were in a dogfight after you get done playing them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should be able to beat them if you are a upper echelon team. But you're going to be in a 24-21 kind of game where they realize, damn, why are the Jets playing us so tough? But you're still going to win the game is my point. Well, you know, so I think they're going to blow Buffalo and blow Miami out, but they're going to be in a fight with the Jets. But you're right, the Jets just don't have it on offense to complement that defense right now. Yeah, I agree. It's the Patriots in a walk.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. And we're wrapping up, having a good time here. Let's kind of talk about AFC North. Go ahead, you can start with that one, JQ. Go ahead, bro.
If I'm being objective, it's probably the same conversation. If Pittsburgh is going to win it, and then you can throw three names in the hat, whoever comes out second, third, and fourth, you can almost make an argument, well, that's not true. I can't see Cleveland coming in second. I can see them being third. I can see Cincinnati being last. I can see Baltimore being second. Or I can see Cincinnati being second, Baltimore third, and Cleveland fourth. Or Cleveland's feeling to me is third. I don't think they get up to second. I definitely don't get up to first. I think it's Pittsburgh's division to lose, well, without a doubt. You know, Andy Dalton just holds that Bengals team back. Joe Flacco just holds that Baltimore team back.
Oh,
and we don't know who everybody
–
and everybody holds the Browns back. So, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, they're going to be more competitive, I think, this year, but they're not going to go from 0-16 to a 10-16. I just don't see that happening. So, again, Pittsburgh and everybody else, as much as it pains me to say that.
Yep, it's still Pittsburgh's division. Obviously – There's only two things, well, maybe three things that could possibly hold Pittsburgh back. I just don't see it happening. Obviously, Le'Veon Bell's holdout. They have a new offensive coordinator this year. You know, seeing how they match with him and things of that nature, Randy Fitchner. And then if anybody just can so happen to hang around Pittsburgh, week 15 to 16 schedule is New England and the Saints. So, if anybody can just hang around with them toward the end of the year, there's a chance. There is a chance. Mm-hmm. But I still expect for it to be Pittsburgh. And realistically, I expect them to win this division by at least four games. So I think there's also a big gap there. I think Baltimore will be the team that comes in second place. Sorry, JQ. But I think this is a big year for John Harbaugh, too. A lot of people don't realize this, but the Ravens have missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. And so this is a big year, and there's some talk up there possibly about removing him if they don't make it back to the playoffs this year. Even though I think for the most part he's a pretty good coach. So this is definitely quietly a big year for John Harbaugh, and he could be somewhat on a hot seat this year. But, you know, it's just going to come down to, you know, their defense, Joe Flacco, of course. Can he look like the QB that took him to the Super Bowl at least? Can he get back to being that quarterback? So there's a lot of question marks on this Baltimore Ravens team. So we'll see. And the big shocker for me is I think Cleveland moves up third place in the division. I think at some point when you look at the talent of their roster, you have to start seeing them moving in the right direction here. When you look at Myles Garrett, when you look at Jarvis Landry's on this team, when you look at a lot of the personnel they have on defense and offensive line, the question mark is still going to be, Tyrod Taylor versus Baker Mayfield. But I think at some point here, with the personnel that they have, you have to see them move up to somewhere. And I think they could possibly be somewhere in a mix of a 5-6 win team. And I think Cincinnati is kind of somewhere in the same boat. You might get your wish this year, JQ. I know it might be bittersweet, but this might be the year they get rid of Marvin Lewis, too.
But it can't be him. It's got to be him and Andy. I need them to go together in the same car. They can put all their stuff in the trunk and head out together in the same car. That's what I need. And if Baltimore gets rid of John Harbaugh, please, Cincinnati, I'm dead serious. Please, Cincinnati, talk to John Harbaugh. I mean, it just is what it is. Things run their course. They never were great. They've gotten a longer leash in Cincinnati than they would have gotten in any other city. Atlanta, New Orleans would not have put up with that for as long as Cincinnati has put up with it. So I agree. I can see that happening. I mean, they can be good on defense, but I still think Andy Dalton is bad enough to hold them back. And I can see Cleveland overtaking them. I don't think Cleveland's going to be 0-16 bad. And when I see that early, I just don't think they can move all the way up to 10 wins. But from 0-16, if you go from no wins to 6 wins, I mean, that's still an improvement. That's showing signs of life. And I think that's what you're going to see out of Cleveland this year.
Yeah. And I think there's Cleveland's ceiling. I think their ceiling is about 5 or 6 games. I think they could be that kind of. You can see when you look at the personnel on their roster, they have talent now. It's just a matter of
Josh Gordon.
Yep. The talent is not the question mark anymore of Cleveland. It's just the development and the growth. And can Hugh Jackson get them over the hump? But when you look at the quarterback position in this division right now, Ben Roethlisberger with the Steelers, obviously you still measured against him. Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson, and then you look at Cleveland, Baker Mayfield, Tyrod Taylor, you can almost say that Cincinnati's quarterback position is now the worst in the division with Andy Dalton in the division. And Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson has got a huge upside. I think we already know who Andy Dalton is at this stage.
Yes, crown him. Sorry, a little Denny Green for you. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
You ready?
Yes, I am.
All right, good deal. Gentlemen, let's talk about the top 5 candidates for the MVP. We're going to switch gears to basketball and the season. Go ahead, Rob.
Obviously, LeBron James changing teams to go to the Lakers. I think he was always, he was still being this conversation, even if the Lakers finish in the middle of the pack in the Western Conference between 5 and 8 or something like that in the conference, I think his individual stats will still keep him in the conversation, even though I don't think his team will be nowhere near the top of the Western Conference. So, but his name will still be in the mix. Obviously, James Harden, the defending MVP, I think his name will still be in the conversation because in the regular season, he's a beast. He just folds in the playoffs. So he'll still be in the conversation when it comes to the MVP conversation. And then we look at the Warriors. I think you have to throw Steph Curry, if healthy, and Kevin Durant in that conversation as well because they're just they're going to be the number one team in the league. So I think both of their names will be in the MVP conversation as well. And then, of course, Russell Westbrook. And, you know, with the OKC, and I'm going to give a sixth name. I'm not being a homer, but I think Anthony Davis is going to be in that conversation too when it comes to the MVP conversation. So, actually, I have six names there. And guess what? All six of those players are in the Western Conference.
Yeah,
that's scary. But, yeah, Anthony Davis finished in the top three this past year. So, but yeah, I expect those to be the six names in the conversation this year for MVP.
Nice. Well, I'm sorry, but I'm going to subtract Anthony Davis because I think they just lost too much. And I think they're not going to be high enough up in the rankings for him to get that nod. I'm going to throw in one person from the Eastern Conference, and that's going to be Joel Embiid. I really think if he stays healthy and that Philadelphia team keeps progressing, I think he's definitely going to be in the conversation because I think he's done enough to raise his Q factor, and it's a lot to be said for that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to you have to also be good, but you also have to have that name recognition where people know who you are and they expect this out of you and expect your team to be in a certain position in order to be up for that consideration. Everybody that you named outside of Anthony Davis, I mean, basketball players, basketball fans actually know who Anthony Davis is, but those other five have reached a status in cult lore, you know what I'm saying, cultural lore, that people know who they are, and when they see them exploits, they're like, oh, my God, and it still extends to the writers as well. They have their favorites, and they're going to go with those, you know, already made stars, packaged stars that are out there for the masses. So that's why I say I think Joel Embiid is starting to put himself with his talk and his tweet game and his game on the court into that conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't think Ben Simmons is quite there yet, but I think Embiid is there. He's going to knock on it. So if they finish, you know, first or second at East battling with the Celtics, and he's a big part of it, what we see from him that he can be, I think he can be an outside catalyst for it. But if I'm being honest, those five you named, it's going to come from one of those. You can probably shake it up and roll it out and make an argument for either one of them. KD, Steph, LeBron, Westbrook, KD, Steph, LeBron, Westbrook, Harden. Those five, I think, are going to be your main five all year.
So you removing Anthony Davis because they lost Boogie Cousins?
And Rondo.
But do you realize how much better he was after Cousins got hurt?
I understand that. But I think losing Rondo is going to hurt them a whole lot. Unless Drew takes another step, he took a really big step in the playoffs. The key to that is Drew Holiday. If he takes another step and continues that through this season to give him a second start to give them more of the win totals, I just think it's going to hurt Anthony Davis win-loss-wise where that same problem won't affect LeBron. Because you got L.A. coming from so far back. If he gets them into that playoff picture, they're like, oh, yeah, look what he went and did. We already love who he is. He's LeBron. He's going to stay in that conversation. But if you're Anthony Davis and you lose those guys and you were from the 60s, now you are maybe on the outside looking in, I think that's going to be a detrimental case to his, you know, his MVP candidacy. That's all I'm saying. Anthony Davis is a stud. Don't get me wrong. He's a stud. Would love to have him. Not knocking him in terms of that. But if you got LeBron pulling L.A. up and you got – somebody's got to come out right. And the Pelicans, sorry, are one of those candidates to maybe come back because of the losses. Unless Drew Holiday takes a step, I think that can hurt Anthony Davis' candidacy. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. But basketball-wise, that dude is a stud. There's no doubt about it. Him and the Greek Freak. And that's another one who's not going to get the push because he's not really a household name quite yet. But that dude is a stud as well. He's the only reason Milwaukee is even knocking on the door of any kind of playoff contention. So that's my only thing. It's a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about the Pelican standpoint here, Rondo replacing him is a question mark. There's no doubt about it because I think he had some basketball IQ and some leadership to really help that team. But you got to realize it here. DeMarcus Cousins was not on this team in the playoffs, and they were actually better without him, and they replaced him. And they got Julius Randle in the mix.
Keith Mitchell.
there. So, I mean, I can see the point guard question mark, but I guess we have to have this conversation next year. But I think Anthony Davis is definitely in the top five in MVP, or at worst, top six when it comes to MVP.
Yeah, we'll see.
He was that
up
good.
Close.
He was that good down the stretch. And and basically, they single-handedly swept Portland.
Gotcha.
Well, yeah. Well, all right. Yeah. Well, I wonder how I do that, too.
Yeah. Good call. Good call. All right, gentlemen. I am really – it's been a long day. I'm going to let you guys pick your last topic. And after you guys pick the last topic, we'll go ahead and wrap up the show. So, and you guys – I'm saying you guys can pick to speak what you want to talk about for sure. But go ahead, JQ. Start it off, and we'll win Rob, and we'll get in the show after that as well. Rob, go ahead.
Well, you know what I'm going to take out of it. Can anyone pick Lonzo's ball shot? Maybe, but I know who can't do it, and it won't be LeVar Ball because his daddy looking have that ball for that shot all this long and didn't do nothing about it. So we can take one name off of the list. He can't do it. It's
you.
Really
I'm going to say that too. <'Cause yeah.
laughs> it ain't his daddy. That's all I'm going to say. It ain't his daddy for sure. I think so, but he's got to be willing. It's one of those things with Lonzo that he's getting to a point where his dad, in this point of his career in the NBA, he's going to have to start making a break and not totally push him to the side because his dad's part of the reason why he is where he is, and you've got to give LeVar, for all his foolishness, a lot of credit for getting his boys at least into the conversation, especially Lonzo, because the talent that Lonzo has. But Lonzo has to be willing to look in the mirror and say, you know what, I can do a whole lot of other things as well on this court, but I can be really good if I look myself in the face and my dad, who didn't want it to be messed with, say, hey, man, in order for my longevity in my career, I need to fix my shot so people can't slack off of me. And that makes me such a much more complete basketball player with everything else I can do. So I think it can be fixed. There are dudes out there that are shot doctors that help people all the time fix their shot when they want it to be fixed. So does Lonzo want it to be fixed? Is he willing to put in that work to fix his shot? He's working out, and that's all good and well, but he's got to get that shot fixed. If you remember, Jason Kidd was a horrible shooter coming out of Cal, coming into the NBA.
Yep.
And I think when he retired, he was in the top 10 in three-point shooting, three-point shots made. So, I mean, it can be done if you're willing to allow it to be done. That's my only thing for Lonzo. Can he make that break from what his dad has said? Like, you don't need to do this. You can leave it right as it is. You're the greatest of all time right now. I don't want to tear you down, son. Like, easy. No, he's not. We need to fix that shot. Will he do it? We'll see.
All right. Good call. Rob?
I think he really do, his role could slightly change with LeBron James. You know, LeBron James likes to have the basketball in his hand. He likes to be the facilitator. So I definitely think he needs desperately. He's not a bad shooter. He's just not a
streaky.
Yeah. It's just and his shot is not designed to shoot over people because of his release point. And so that's the challenge with him. But I do think he needs to really work on his spot-up jump shot because of LeBron James' penetration game and the kickout standpoint. So I think that's something that he really needs to really work on because he may play a little bit more off the ball with LeBron James at times. So this is definitely something that he needs to work on, going forward. And as far as the conversation between Lonzo Ball and Jason Tatum, you know, from a career standpoint, I definitely think Jason Tatum is the guy who's a little bit further along, definitely at this point in their careers, and has a potential. Jason Tatum has a potential. I'm not sold on Lonzo Ball being an all-star in the NBA just yet. I expect him to be a solid NBA player, no doubt about it. But Jason Tatum, in my opinion, will be an NBA all-star. He's got that kind of athletic ability. I think he'll get it done on both ends of the floors. He really showed that there in the playoffs. And so I think the Celtics have themselves a stud there. So I definitely think he will be the better pro going forward of the two players between Jason Tatum and Lonzo Ball. And as far as the 76ers, if Joel Embiid can stay healthy with Ben Simmons, and if they can add another piece in the next 5 or 6 years, I think once Golden State starts to fade, I think they're definitely in the championship conversation. And I think they can win at least one together if Embiid can stay, if both can stay healthy and add another piece or two. But I do think that's at least 5 or 6 years away, though.
Yeah, the thing about it is, though, Ben Simmons calling himself the Fresh Prince. I don't know how long Ben Simmons is long for Philadelphia. and trying to share that spotlight with Joel Embiid, because Joel has got such a big personality that, you know, I wonder if they not have friction, but they, you know, you need to have your own team. I need to have my own team kind of piece. So I think if they stay together, they definitely could win one. But I just worry about their long-term partnership because of that, because you see it with these NBA players. Outside of them being friends and talking about it, you know, in the offseason, like, we should play together. Sometimes it's like, you know what, dude, you need your team, I need my team. And just real quickly on Tatum and Lonzo Ball, the problem the Ball is going to have is that the Lakers passed on Tatum to get Ball. So they're going to always be tied moving forward in their career. Same thing with Markel Fultz. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not doing anything for Philadelphia, and they're looking like, man, as much as we hate LeVar, Lonzo has had glimpses, and, oh, my God, Jason Tatum now in our division and in the Eastern Conference is balling out of control. We could have had that guy, and we missed on both. We didn't take him, and to a lesser extent, Ball, because still, Ball's not – he's had flashes, but folks hasn't had a flash, you know, like no spark. So if you're Philadelphia looking like, damn, did we miss, you know, on this? You know, it's hard to trust the process, and this dude can't even get in the rotation during the playoffs.
Yep.
So – those two guys have the specter of Jason Tatum kind of looming over them, and I think they know it, and they've got to improve their games, because Jason Tatum was spot on still when Kyrie got hurt. Him and Jaylen Brown both just propelling that team to the brink of going to the NBA Finals. So, yes, you would take Tatum all day, every day, twice on Sunday right now. So it's going to be real interesting to see how that affects Lonzo Ball and also Markel Fultz in terms of, you know, we're in the same draft class, same top three. We got to raise our games because this dude right here is balling.
Yep. All right, gentlemen. Love it. Rob, you guys have done a fantastic job. Go ahead and wrap up the show as we get ready to end another successful Talk to Sports 12 Men.
Yes, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in. We talked about a lot tonight. Obviously, got some college football in, NFL. We're definitely going to continue our previews on our upcoming shows. As we talked about earlier, we still got the AFC South and West to get to, and also we'll get to some Super Bowl playoff predictions, even though we're kind of giving you a sneak peek already at that. Also, we still got more college football conferences, the Big Ten Plus Four, the ACC, the SEC, and the Pac-12. So we still got those upcoming conferences to preview going forward. We'll be up on this coming Sunday night. I think it will be the 12th, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. You don't want to miss it. Good night, people.
Vic Hugh? Yeah. Looks like my folks got dropped off. But again, we appreciate you. We will see you guys same time, same channel next week. Seacrest out. Be good, guys.